It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome into another episode of The Crimson Corner. I am your host, Michelle Bodkin, and also your KSL Sports Utah Utes Insider. You haven't noticed, we've taken a little bit of a break from doing the podcast. People were getting married, having babies, going on vacation, and then this weird thing happened in college football where it just all kind of blew up, and it just felt like a little too much, so we took a step back. But now we are back because we are just on the edge of starting up the 2022 football season. And you know what? We thought over here, it would be a great idea since Utah is poised to potentially have another really big season to maybe go back in time and examine some of the other really big seasons in Utah football history. So that's what we're going to do over the next coming weeks until Utah boards that plane to Gainesville to open their season against Florida. With that being said, the first team that we felt like we had to kind of look back on is the 1994 team. They were one of the first teams to finish ranked in like years. I believe it was number 8 in the coaches poll and number 10 in the AP poll. And they finished with a really big bowl game over Arizona. I believe they beat 3 ranked teams, if I'm not mistaken, in that season. And it just kind of signaled a turn of the tides for the Utes. After years of incompetence, it looked like Ronnie Mack had everything kind of back on track. And it really kind of is a marker for what we've seen from the team today. With that being said, I had to have a guest on to talk about that time frame, almost 28 years ago now, if you can believe it. Please welcome in my good friend, Edwin Garrett, more lovingly known as EG by the people closest to him. He was a former defensive back during the 1994 year, and he has some phenomenal insight on the team. Welcome in.
Thanks, Michelle. Appreciate it. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I love getting together with you guys when you come into town and just talking about what things were like back in the early 90s, kind of mid-90s, you know, as Coach Mack is getting things back on track. You know, give us a review of, you know, what things were like when you were playing in Utah.
Yeah, so, you know, it was a when I got up there, it was a blue state. I mean, it was everything was BYU. University of Utah was really a second thought. Like, no one really cared too much about us. And so, you know, it was interesting to kind of see the tide over the course of the 3 years I was there, to see the tide kind of turn, so to speak. I mean, I know back in the first team I played on in 92, we lost to BYU. And it seemed like they were like the invincible force. I'll be honest with you. Like, you know, we'd play our schedule, we'd go into that game being the last game of the year. And it always seemed like, you know, if we stayed in the game, it was going to be, you know, like, hey, we did a good job. But really, I think the turning tide of, like, from a program standpoint, at least while I was there, was the 93 game up in Lavelle Edwards Stadium, when we won 34-31 on a 50-yard kick. I think that was one of the things where, you know, if you're pushing an object that's immovable and then you finally get it to budge, it gives you that hope, and then you know you can move it. And I think that was kind of the game that kind of spearheaded us kind of moving in a direction where we realized that, hey, we can play these guys, we can beat these guys, we can compete on a bigger level.
That's always – I feel like when we talk about Utah's emergence as becoming – powerhouse might be a little bit of a stretch, but – having a bigger presence in college football, it always seems to stem around BYU, at least especially in the earlier years. That was just kind of the measuring stick. What do you think of things now with that rivalry and how things have progressed since you guys played back in the early 90s?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's totally different. I mean, you know, going into those seasons, you know, BYU was always circled on the schedule, on the calendar. And, you know, even if the season wasn't that great, if you went in and you could win that game, then you felt like you accomplished something that year. I think we've progressed as a program to a place now where, you know, I mean, BYU hasn't, you know, they beat us, you know, recently, but we had won like 10 straight. I mean, it's not really a huge game. And I say that in all respects to BYU. I think that that game, if possible, should still be played yearly. But I think that, you know, we've, as a program, have grown and moved on to a bigger, you know, bigger conference and maybe better rivalries in terms of, you know, playing some of the schools in the Pac-12.
Now, I know hearing stories from back in 2004 and 2008, there was a sense before the season started that the team was going to be really, really good. There was just this feeling within the program when I talked to guys from those eras. Did you guys get that sense heading into the 1994 season?
Yeah, you know, we felt like we were really good. I mean, I get up there in 92, we play Washington State in the Copper Bowl, and their quarterback was Drew Bledsoe. We played fairly well in that game. You segue into the 93 year, you know, we had, you know, Jamal Anderson was our big running back. Henry Luss was a tight end / slot receiver type guy, right? And we were good, but there was just some things that were a little off on that team. So going into the fall camp of 94 and understanding that we had Mike McCoy coming back as quarterback, we had lost Jamal. That was going to be a big missing part for us, but we had a pretty good group of running backs. We felt good. And then, you know, one of the biggest factors was when you look at, you know, the greatest player I've ever played with. I mean, Luther Ellis. I mean, Luther was an absolute monster versus everyone. There's a man among boys. And so knowing he was coming back and on the team and had Bronzell Miller coming off the edge and we had a very veteran secondary, we knew that we could compete. And so going into that year, we felt like, you know, this is going to be an opportunity for us to have a really good season. We didn't really know how good, but we knew we were going to have a better season than we had the year before. And the year before we were like 7-5, and then we lost to USC in the Freedom Bowl to finish at 7-6.
At what point in the season were you guys starting to feel pretty good and like it could be a special season?
Oh, it would have been going into the Colorado State game. I mean, that game was a nationally televised game. We had them up there. They had a really good team. It was, you know, I mean, we ended up slipping up and losing the Air Force later in the season in New Mexico later in the season to cost us the conference. And Colorado State actually ended up winning the conference. But going into that game, it was two ranked WAC teams at the time, which was kind of unheard of. We go in, we play a nail biter back and forth. Harold Luss gets an interception at the goal line and runs it back and kind of seals the deal. And from that point forward, kind of moving forward, we knew that we were solid. We had a little bit of obviously a hiccup later in the season against New Mexico. And I think that was just, you know, reading our own press clippings, like we hadn't really ever had the opportunity to read, you know, your own press clippings and stuff in the newspaper, you felt really good about yourself, and then we kind of got put in our place.
You mentioned the Colorado State game as being kind of a key within that season. What were some of the other games that you feel like really just kind of defined what that season ended up being?
Well, I think early in the season, you know, you open up, I don't believe we opened up with them, but it was like either second, third game. We went to Oregon. And so we go to Oregon. We play those guys and beat those guys. You know, those guys are supposed to be really good. They ended up playing Penn State in the Rose Bowl that year with Kerry Collins and Kajana Carter at Penn State. So going there and beating them in that environment, and like, you know, what Oregon is now and what it was then, it's always been a wild crowd, loud. The crowd's right on top of you. So a really hostile environment to get in there and get that win. And so, you know, you look at that win as being early in the season, and it mattered, right? And so then you get into the Colorado State. San Diego State was a trip down to San Diego, which was, you know, close to home for – well, it was home for me, but we had a lot of Southern California guys. And so that was something that that was a game that they had a lot of athletes. They had just lost Marshall Faulk the year before. But they still had guys. And so, you know, that was a big win, and to come down in Southern California and get a win like that. So, you know, I mean, you look at the way our schedule broke down. Once we got rolling, we felt pretty good about what we were doing and how we were doing. And I think, you know, when you look at least from a defensive side of the ball, you look at Fred Whittingham, like Coach Kyle's father, like that man wasn't going to take any underperforming from anyone. So, you know, I mean, I think he struck fear in everybody, but he also was respected by all. So the coaches did a really good job of keeping us grounded and trying to keep us on the straight and narrow.
Talk about Mad Dog a little bit. You know, I feel like we don't really hear about him and the legacy that he left at Utah before Kyle ended up kind of becoming who he did.
Yeah. So, I mean, for big wit, man, love that man to death. Rest his soul. Love that man to death. He was, you know, so when I came up, I had got recruited by Dan Henson, was the quarterback coach, and Greg McMackin was our D coordinator. By the time I got to school, McMackin had left for another school. I believe it was Navy, and Fred Whittingham was the D coordinator. And so, you know, he was a person that instilled toughness in the defense. You know, you weren't going to want to come off the field after disappointing him. Very, very, very smart football mind. You know, I mean, he had us doing stuff, you know, that, I mean, between our D front, and it's crazy because and Kyle in 94, Kyle was on that. He was our D line coach. And so, you know, it's crazy to see the team progress to where it is now, but in my mind, it hasn't really progressed in terms of the philosophies of what we had. All the philosophies that Fred Whittingham had are the same philosophies that Kyle Whittingham has now. Toughness, mental toughness, get after it. You know, a defensive-minded guy. And so Big Wit was very, very instrumental in the things that we did and kind of getting us ready to go. Because, you know, in the WAC conference back then, you know, the WAC was known for just shootouts. You know, you go out and, you know, it's a 50-45 game. And so he wanted us to go out and be equally as good as our offense.
Talk about Kyle Whittingham, because 1994 was the first year that he was actually with Utah as a coach, and he hasn't left. He has had his stamp, his signature on every single big win, every single big season since 1994.
Hey. Kyle's the GOAT. He is the GOAT of the University of Utah. And, you know, Coach Ron McBride is a founding father of that. And Kyle has taken us, you know, to the next level times two. You look at the stability of our program, and it says a lot about what Kyle is, what he stands for, how he is managed a program for that long, which was quite impressive when you look at a lot of turnover these days in terms of, you know, college programs and things like that. So he's the GOAT of Utah, period. That's not questionable. He's brought stability. He's brought respect to not only the University of Utah, but the state of Utah. You know, he's on the top five list of every current coaching college coach in the country. And we owe him a lot. I mean, I remember that brief moment when he was looking at considering going back to his alma mater at BYU, and I think everybody was on pins and needles when he was making that decision.
Do you think Kyle gets the respect that he deserves, considering how long and prolific his career has been so far with the Utes?
I think he gets the respect in Utah. I don't think he gets respect, you know, nationally. I don't think he gets as much respect as he should get. You know, I mean, you know, I talked to a lot of guys, and, you know, I played ball against a lot of guys. A lot of guys went to different programs. And you know, you, when you start talking about, you know, Fiesta Bowl wins, you know, Sugar Bowl wins, Rose Bowl games, the streak of consecutive bowl game wins that we had, like, those numbers are absolutely ridiculously great. And I don't think a lot of people know that. And I don't think a lot of people have paid attention outside of the state of Utah. But, you know, inside the state, I know he gets his respect. But, I mean, he's a great coach, and he should get more respect.
There are a few other familiar faces from that 1994 team that are now currently coaching for Utah. Your teammates, Sharif Shaw, and of course, Luther Ellis is a new addition this year to the coaching staff. You know, talk about those two, what they were like as players back in 1994, and what you think they bring as coaches.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, Sharif, man, like, that's obviously when he came on board, great hire. Just a really good human being. Loved playing with him. He was my starting strong safety in 92 before Ernest Boyd took that over after Sharif left. You know, from L.A., I believe he went to Dorsey High School. Really good recruiter. Feel like when he goes into kids' living rooms, I think he's a person that you can trust, that he's going to take care of your son. You know, and then you look at, you know, all the tragedy that's been around the program of late. Having someone like that on staff to be able to try to, you know, take the temperature of the guys and make sure that we're taking care of those guys in the right way. I think he's been absolutely imperative in these last couple of years with everything that's happened in the program. And then, you know, you look at Luther. I mean, like, once again, there's I could talk to you about Luther for an hour. The football player he was, the human being that he is. One of the most humble human beings to this day. You know, I mean, his first round draft pick in the NFL draft. I see that man. Anytime I see him, he's going to run up and be like, "Hey, EG," and give me a big hug. You know, he's just always been humble. And knowing the game, I mean, he knows the game inside and out. And so, you know, bringing him on staff, like, that's a huge, huge get for us. You know, it's another guy that's back coaching at his alma mater. And it's, I think he's going to be, it's going to be great. I think he's going to be a great addition.
Utah talks about family a lot, and a brotherhood. And I think fans are kind of aware of that existing in the here and now. I don't think they realize how far back that actually goes. I know that you guys try and make a trip, at least a trip every year, to get together, go see a game, and just reconnect as former teammates and friends. You know, what kind of spurned that sort of relationship on, and what do you think keeps it going despite, you know, players coming and going, you know, eventually coaches do change out, that sort of thing?
You know, well, I think for us, you know, I think it started with Coach McBride. I mean, Coach McBride is a leader of men. He was not just a leader of football. He's a leader of men. He was able to get us to inspire us to do things that maybe we didn't want to do, but he was able to get that done. You know, and so when you play, you know, meaningful football games, you build that camaraderie with each other, right? And so, you know, I mean, I think from the point that, you know, after I graduated, a lot of the guys that played after me, I met them just coming back and forth to different games and going to different events and whatnot. And, you know, we all talked and shared stories, and a lot of it was centered around Coach Mack, right? Like them sharing Mack stories, us sharing Mack stories, and just kind of getting together. And then, you know, we have a big contingency of guys down here in Southern California. We keep up with each other. We're always going to come out for one game. We're always going to, you know, try to get to one or two road games, you know, be a little different now with USC and UCLA not being in the conference. So you don't get the California, the Southern California yearly trip. But, you know, it's the network was bred through winning football games together in that family environment. Coach Mack always bred family. And I think that was one of the biggest reasons why we won football games. And I always tell kids now, I've spent some time coaching high school football. I coached Darren Carrington when he was in high school. I coached him his whole high school career. And I often tell people that, you know, like when you're looking at sending your child somewhere to go play Division I sports, I'm like, you need to talk to the alumni, talk to the parents of some of the kids who played in the past. They'll give you the real down and dirty about what the program's about, how they're treated, how they feel they're accepted. And, you know, Utah still accepts us. You know, we're old guys now. They still accept us with open arms when we go to games and make us feel like, you know, we're still part of the program. And so that's a very good job of them doing for us, making us feel like a part. So we feel like we're still part of something that's special.
Back in the early 90s, and even I think up into the thousands, mental health was just not a very big thing in football coaching. And yet it always feels like when I talk to guys that played under Coach McBride, that he was a little ahead of the curve on that. He understood that you guys have things going on in life. He knew how to be tough on you, but he also knew when to kind of pull back and just show you some love and build you up. You know, but was that really the case? And how important do you think that is, you know, going forward now in today's game?
No, I think it totally was the case. I mean, so, you know, you're playing, you're on the team, you're part of a position group, right? And so you're having those daily encounters with your position coach, and, you know, some are good, some are bad. Anytime you stepped out of line or anytime there was something else going on, Coach Mack always had that pulse, the pulse of that, right? And so he would call guys into his office, pull them aside, and have those side discussions and make sure that he cared about people. I mean, one of the biggest reasons why I went to the University of Utah as opposed to going to some other colleges was that when Coach Mack came out to recruit me, my mom was working, and she was working two jobs. She was at her first job, and she still had to go to her second job later. He was in town. He asked where my mom worked and wanted to go to her job. He went to her job, and he took her out to lunch, right, which wasn't anything any of the other recruiters were going were doing, but it showed me that he cared enough about my mother to take her from her first job and go sit down and have lunch with her and talk to her about how he was going to ensure that her son became a good man, not a good football player, right? And so when I got out of college, and I've been a police officer now for 23 years for San Diego Police Department, Mack was one of my he was a reference for me. And I remember him calling me because I used his name, and I remember calling me. He's like, "Hey, Edwin, like, you trying to be a police officer?" And I'm like, "Yeah, coach, list you as a reference." He's like, "Yeah, I got you. Don't worry about it." He's like, "All I know is whenever you come to Salt Lake, I want to see your police badge. I'm so proud of you." You know, and so the fact that we still talk to McBride to this day, and we're still around him, we still talk to his wife, we still engage in the activities that he's still doing in the community, that's a testament to what type of human being he is. And there's not too many other players that played at other colleges that can say, "Hey, I still talk to my coach. Hey, I know where my coach is. Hey, my coach still cares about me. Hey, my coach still asks about me." Coach McBride legitimately does that. And that matters. And that's why there's such a big brotherhood with the University of Utah, especially the guys who play for Mack, because we know that he truly, truly cares about us. And that's of the utmost importance. And I think as it's moved through the program, you know, with Kyle, you know, I mean, all I would say in terms of, you know, mental health and whatnot is, I mean, the way that program handled the deaths of those football players was phenomenal. I mean, it was absolutely phenomenal. I mean, being looking from the outside in, it was phenomenal. And understanding that, yeah, I wanted to ask, you know, Luther or Sharif, you know, like, hey, like, how things are going, or Manny Hendricks, who's in the front office. Like, I would ask, hey, man, how are the guys? Like, it's like, man, we taking care of these guys, man. We taking care of them. And I knew that was true because it's always been the case at the University of Utah. That's my experience. It's always been the case.
I know back in your playing days, you guys had a few tragedies, and even later on in life with Bronzell Miller, right. It was a very tragic thing for you guys. Sitting and watching last year's team go through what they went through, you know, what was going through your head?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I work in a job where I see a lot of tragedy, and you never get used to it. You know, you never get used to it. And I think one of the hardest things is when you look at young people who pass away and, you know, you feel like they have their whole life in front of them. You feel like they lived their life the right way to be able to, you know, be in college. And, you know, and I remember my years in Utah, so, you know, some of the best years of my life. Right. And, you know, you feel like you're invincible, and to lose not one, but two kids, like, I mean, it was a pit in my stomach. And I think that was a pit in all of our stomachs. And so I remember talking to several guys. I remember talking to you, and I was like, hey, like, I don't care if these guys don't win another game. Like, I just want them to take care of each other. I just want them to be okay. I just want them to be able to get through this situation and be better, stronger, younger, young men, you know. And so the fact that the way the season ended, getting to the Rose Bowl, I mean, once again, it goes back to the coaching staff and all the people on staff up there, how well they took care of those players, to get them to be able to pick themselves up, be resilient, get back on the field and win some meaningful football games and do it for those two players.
And I think the most touching thing about that whole story is those guys, Ty Jordan and Aaron Lowe, are still very much a part of the team. They just recently announced that they are having 22% little bumpers on the front of their helmets. They're going to do the hand-painted helmets in honor of those two guys. Like, they're still very much a part of everything that they're doing. You know, what do you think that says about the program, that they're still so mindful of the fact that these two guys should be here and they're still part of the family, and they've now made their family members part of that Utah football family?
Just once again, Michelle, just goes back to family. You know, I mean, if you're going to send your kid somewhere, I'm going to send my kid to Utah, not because I played there, but what I know about this program, how well they're going to take care of those players, how well they're going to continue to engage in those players' families and their families' lives. Like, you know, I mean, I can only speak from my experience at Utah, but I know a lot of other guys that played a lot of other places, and they're just like, they're kind of amazed, like, man, like all you ever talk about is Utah. You know, all you ever wear is Utah stuff. You rep Utah so hard, like, and you played a long time ago. Like, what's up with that? And I tell them, you'll never understand unless you went through it. You'll never understand unless you're a part of that program, unless you're a part of that team with those coaches and how they made you feel. You know, people don't, you know, when I think back to our coaches, I knowing the coaches that are on staff now, I know those coaches really care about those kids. And I know there's so many student athletes in the country that when they leave their programs, the coaches move on. Not move on from the job, but move on to the next player, you know, and that's, you know, it's in some ways it is amateur sports, but it's a business. But at Utah, it's always been a family. I hope it always continues to be a family. That's what has bred success there. And, you know, I mean, I love the fact that that's how we handle business.
Looking back on the legacy of that 1994 team, you know, what do you think the lasting mark is for you guys as far as how Utah football looks now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we were one of the first great teams. You know, the University of Utah put the whole 94 team into the School Hall of Fame. So that, you know, that mattered. That shows that we were one of the first great teams. You know, I mean, we weren't just ranked. We finished number 8 on one poll, number 10 in another poll. You know, I mean, we beat the Pac-10 championship. We beat the Pac-10 champion that year in Oregon. You know, and so I think that, you know, what we did, it was a special time. It meant a lot to us. You know, and as the teams have progressed, you look at the 04 team, the 08 team, and the last year team, like, we feel like, you know, not that we're part of those things, but we understand, like, how big those games were, how big the program has moved. And we like to feel like we're a little part of starting that, getting that thing kicked in the right direction.
Looking ahead to this year, you know, there's talk that this team potentially is a playoff team. Do you see that?
I see it. The schedule sets up perfect schedule for us. You know, you open up in SEC country. What better place to open up? I mean, there, you know, you talk to anybody that thinks they know football, and they're going to talk about the SEC as the greatest conference, blah, blah, blah. So we go down to the swamp. You get that win, right? That's going to set the tone for the season. With what has happened last year and playing in the Rose Bowl and that environment of, you know, the granddaddy of them all, with Cam coming back and Tavion and the tight ends and all the guys on defense, Mark Phillips, and getting the young cornerback that was hurt last year, who I felt like was just as good of a player as Clark Phillips was before he got hurt. I believe he got hurt in the Weber State game. I can't think of his name right now. You know, bringing in Bartons, God bless the Barton family. Like, wow. Bringing in young Barton. Yeah, we got leadership. We got good senior leadership. And then we got some very, very good young players, Bishop and Barton coming in. I mean, we're poised. We're poised. And I think once we get past that SC game, I mean, not the SC game, the Florida game, you know, we're looking at SC schedule. They're probably coming to Salt Lake undefeated because their schedule is really fair. Really, they should be able to manage that schedule getting up to Utah. And I'll be up there for that game. That's going to be a clash of the Titans. And we're going to see what they bring into town. And we typically play them very, very good. And we definitely play them good at home.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing you guys as the season kicks off. I have one final question for you. It's one of my favorite questions to ask anybody I interview. You know, what does it mean to be a Ute?
Wow. You know, it means being part of a family, being part of something that's bigger than you. You know, understanding that, you know, as we walk around the communities that we live in, you know, we're coaching at high school footballs that we coach, the high school teams that we coach at, that we represent Utah. We always represent Utah. You know, I talked to Fred Whittingham Jr. You know, he'll come down into San Diego and he'll check in on me and see how I'm doing. And, you know, once a Ute, always a Ute. It matters. There's parents in San Diego. There's kids in San Diego that I know that play, that are getting recruited, that want to go to Utah, that want Utah to recruit them, because how I represent Utah. And I haven't played there in 28 plus years, right? But I still represent Utah because I talk about it and how I carry myself and how I live my life. They equate that to the University of Utah. And so that matters to me.
Well, awesome. We'll be seeing you real soon, EG. In the meantime, keep safe and go Utes.
Go Utes, see you in Gainesville. Let's get it done.
All right, guys, that is EG, Edwin Garrett of the 1994 team. You have been listening to the Crimson Corner. We will be back next week highlighting the 2004 team in our countdown of the greatest Utah football seasons ahead of Utah's 2022 season. Thanks for listening. Until next time, as always, go Utes.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.